Welcome back to the Jay and Bay Neighbor Gamers Podcast. I am Bay and I'm joined with Jay.
What's up, Bay? How are you today?
Doing great. This is the first time Jay and I are actually sitting across from each other in the same room, you know? And just for all of you that are concerned, we both got our vaccinations and I've got this cool little setup with these XLR mics connected to the PodTrack P4. And I don't want to get off tangents so much, but let me first introduce the episode. This is episode number 14. And we have an exclusive interview with Kevin Burton from Addy's Games. I'm so glad that he joined us for this episode talking about Dungeons & Dragons and why you should play Dungeons & Dragons, or at least check it out over at Miramar Road, okay? And real quick, speaking of Addy's Games, you can find them on Facebook, / Addy's Games. That's AttaesGames. And their website is ateasegames.shotlightspeed.com. I think the best thing to do is go and Google it, and you'll see their listing, their storefront. And it's a really impressive store. You can find them also, I want to make sure I get all their social media, on Instagram, okay? And that's at Ease Games. Did I mention Twitch?
No, he didn't mention Twitch.
Twitch is @EaseGames and the letters SD, right? And you can see their live Twitch schedule and make sure you check it out. Let me tell you about this show for today. Okay, so we've got our interview with Addy's Games, and then we have a preview of Nintendo's Indie World. And I saw some interesting things there. I saw some not so interesting things. It's just some blah blah stuff.
Yeah,
but
blah blah stuff. Blah blah blah.
Blah blah blah.
Blah blah blah.
But you know how it is. I feel like we've been talking for hours, right? Well, so you can find us, and I'm Bay. This is Jay and Bay, and you can find us on an email, and that's jandbay@neighborgamers.com. Jay and Bay Neighbor Gamers on Instagram and on Twitter at JAY, the letter N, BAY podcast. We've had some interesting downloads this week. We were getting a whole lot of downloads back with our friends, our neighbors in India. And I'm going to say these cities, even though I'm going to, forgive me for saying them wrong, Chandigarh, Delhi, Kargon, Jaipur, Surat, Kolkata, and Pune. All right. And of course, in our own neighborhood, San Diego, followed by some neighboring places. And let me just cover all the stuff in California. All right. We got Oakland, Calexico, Covina, Fontana. People are really excited about us there. I appreciate those downloads. Sylmar, always representing. I love that city, and I've only been there once or twice. Carlsbad, Temecula, and Poway, and of course, our San Diego friends and family. Thanks for being part of our neighborhood. Let's get right to this talk, Jay.
All right.
Yeah, let's get right into it, and let's talk about this Nintendo Indie World. And is this the first time thing for you seeing this, or has this been going on for a little bit?
No, Nintendo's been doing their, like, in the indie showcase, because, you know, I don't think they've been to E3 for a little bit. So, you know, since the pandemic, even a little bit before, they've been throwing up their upcoming future for Nintendo online through a stream. So it's pretty common for them. It's kind of like the way how Sony and Nintendo are going. Sony didn't go to E3 last year. Of course, there was no E3, right? And then the year prior to that, they always did their own showcase. I forget what they call it, what they title it, but it's similar. So I feel like Nintendo was the trailblazer for it, and now other companies are following the same way, just tweaking it a little bit.
Yeah, so the first thing that showed up on this, I think I saw it on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
And this video was Road 96. And I actually thought this looked pretty good. I like the art style of it. Mm-hmm. And I like that the choices that you can make would, there would be so many different results. And it brings me back to back in the day. And I'll take you back to like what, the early 70s, the 80s, right?
Like Oregon Trail?
Oregon Trail.
Are you going to say that?
No, it was not. But you're such a jerk.
Hey, I played that game.
Even before that, was this book called Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yes, I love those books. I mean, just because you could choose your own adventure. I mean, before you just read these books. I mean, I never read very much until nursing school, but you would in like EGM and video game magazines. But, you know, you read to a page and all of a sudden it goes, choose which page you want to go to or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And you go to that page.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you cheat and you don't like that result and then you go back.
Right. Yeah.
But that's where I think a lot of, maybe these, they're probably not as old as I am. Maybe they are, right? And maybe they figured, hey, we want to make this more organic, right? Yeah. And being able to choose and go through this path and having a different result, which would certainly generate more playthrough, right? Yeah. And replayability.
Yeah. It's kind of like Mass Effect. Mass Effect did that to a point, right? With some characters, and some characters would die, some characters wouldn't. Your ending would change a little bit. I know Chrono Trigger did that on the SNES. I think it had 7-something endings, depending on what you do. There's like, I think there's a character, his name is Janice, and you didn't need to get him. That also brings me to Final Fantasy VI. A character, like mid-game, if you don't wait for Shadow when the world is collapsing, then you don't get him for the rest of the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you have to wait. Like, there's a timer. I think the last 10 seconds is when you get him. But if you don't know that, then you're like, oh, I'm going to get off this hell island that's falling out of the sky. You know? So I didn't know that, hence reading EGM or whatever, or just word of mouth got that information so you replay again.
Okay. Yeah. Now, does that make you want to create extra save points knowing that, oh, hey, maybe I'll go back to this and try this another way?
I would do that if I was trophy hunting. I like to play organically the first playthrough.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so one save file?
One save file.
Wow.
Yeah. But if I was trophy hunting, like for Persona 5, there's this area where you have to get Catchy back into your... You have to have a good rapport with him as a confidant. And I knew going into this, since I already played already, I'm like, I don't want to do anything with that guy in my game playthrough. Hence, now I don't get the true ending because I didn't... He's not my best friend. So now I'm going to play New Game Plus to make him my best friend.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. So tell me, with this Nintendo indie world, what stood out to you?
What stood out to me was... The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but you can probably play that on all consoles at some point later in the year. And finally, the Getsumu Fande. So that looks like a cel-shaded Castlevania.
Tried saying that a bunch of times, right?
Yeah. I had to like practice saying that. It looks cool. It looks like playing Strider or playing Ninja Gaiden, or it's just basically a side-scroller. Looks like a Metroidvania, but I'm not entirely sure, but... The art looks cool. The graphics look great. It's very colorful. It looks like it has that Japanese culture of dragons and spirits.
What about the music?
Oh, yeah. It sounded pretty badass.
Some kick-ass music, yeah. Man. Do you listen to that kind of music?
I do. Like, I listen to baby metal when I'm working out. I'm so embarrassed to say that. Oh, my God.
What is
it? It's a female Japanese band.
Baby metal?
Yeah. So I go to Metroflex, and he plays all rock music.
Okay.
And, like, sometimes I don't even need to wear my earphones because I like the music he's listening to. So one day I didn't charge my AirPods, and I was listening to whatever he's playing, and this came out. And I was listening. I was like, oh, it's Japanese. Let me Spotify or Shazam it. I was like, oh, it's baby metal. And then I started going down the rabbit hole, and I just choose some songs. They're on Apple. They're on Apple Music, Essential Music, and they've been out for a while.
Do you say that as that's a group or as a genre?
It's a
band.
It's a band, yeah.
Oh wow.
And it's all they have some English songs, but they also have Japanese It's just mostly Japanese.
I'm an old man, huh?
You know what rock music is.
Shoot. I've never heard of them.
Yeah, I didn't know until now. I guess they've been out for a while. That's cool. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. I can't listen to anything that's very low tempo. Like rap, for example, it sounds cool, like in your car.
Yeah.
But just boom, 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 boom. Really? You know?
Okay.
But here, this is just high tempo.
You like to hear all that melody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's definitely
cool. Most definitely. That's cool. Yeah. I like listening to reggae. And I actually.
Like where you're working out?
Anything.
I can see like on the beach or when you're surfing.
Yeah.
But if I was like lifting weight, I probably want to like relax after.
I think because I'm trying to like control my breathing and stuff.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's more like a Hawaiian reggae, and I say that because the melody is slightly different. Okay, and with Hawaiian reggae, there's some singers that are almost R&B. Like there's this. I don't know if you heard of Sammy Johnson, Sammy J.
Maybe.
Okay, no, probably not. That's okay. That's all right. But yeah, he's got a real sultry R&B vocals. I'll send you, or look it up on Spotify.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you got me watching Aliens, so I'll listen to Sammy J. Yeah.
And here we go, a rabbit hole. I went off on a tangent again.
It's conversational. It's all good.
Right. And that was actually last concert that Christine and I, my wife, went to. So,
oh.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you go to a sushi diner? Like by Kearney Mesa?
No.
Like you go in and it's like Bob Marley, everything themed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right. And then it's sushi. So it's good.
What's it called again?
I think Sushi Diner. I think
Sushi
that's
Diner.
Sushi Diner, Sushi Deli. I'll text it to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, you got all the food places.
Oh man,
down, bro.
No, people are like, I'm not a foodie. I'm like, now I'm looking at it. I'm like, yeah, I like food. I just go wherever.
Eat. Well, you know what? I think it's more of you are searching for really quality restaurants.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if that makes you a foodie, so what? But
yeah, and not want to cook or do dishes, you know.
Well, I'm there too. Yeah. I'm there too, especially on the weekend. Yeah.
Especially every day.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, man. And you're helping out these small businesses.
Definitely. That's
most definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I give them like, used to give like 15% tip. Now I'm giving more just because Karami. There you have great curry.
Really?
Next to Nijia. It's great. Oh. I mean, it's homemade. It tastes homemade and they're very small. But their food is excellent. If you're in Convoy, I mean, a lot of places, restaurants are in Convoy. Hit them up. They're next to Nijia. Very good.
Well, let's go down this tangent a little bit. So where's the last place that you got to eat?
Where'd I go to eat last? There's this Mexican restaurant next in Poway that I went to. I don't know its name.
Yeah.
I forgot. I'll probably visit it sometime this week.
Okay.
And then I got a gift card from Marion. Shout out to her for Grays and Canes because I got her that PS5.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So I got to use that. I
love Raising Canes.
Yeah.
I love it, man. Oh, I went to O Sushi. So shout out to...
Oh, over there. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to O Sushi. They do a great job. It's a really outstanding job. The service there is always good. They're located over in Scripps Power Park, mm-hmm. Poway Parkway.
Yeah, they got some discount too when you eat there or if you dine out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Same with Toto Sushi down here. They do that too.
Oh, really?
They do a military discount. And if you're a healthcare employee, bring in your ID badge and you get 10% off.
Toto. Yeah. Where is that?
It's right next to Carl's Jr.
Oh.
On Carroll Canyon.
Okay.
Yo. We're talking about food. Sorry. But we're hungry. Or maybe I'm hungry. But we can go back to video games if you want.
We better because you got to go on a excursion. You got to go pick something up in a little bit here.
Yeah.
So, sorry to do that, but let's talk about this Chris Tales. This JRPG. What is that?
I briefly looked at it. I just went on the art style. I think that looks enjoyable.
Yeah. Hmm. It kind of reminded me of a mixture of anime and like Dexter's Laboratory, like Cartoon Network.
Yes, Dexter's Laboratory is great. I love that.
And I say that because of the movement of the characters was very cartoon-like.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that, and don't take that as a negative thing. I say that as a positive because it was just interesting. It would catch your eye and you kind of look at it, very engaging. And I'm interested to see what that looks like and and more gameplay.
Yeah.
Getsu Fumiden.
Yeah.
Man. That was the That was the heavy metal music one.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else there?
No, I think just those games that we just kind of highlighted are the ones that appealed to me. I mean, there were a different one, other ones like Oli Oli. I think that was a skateboarding type game. But
right.
Yeah, just not really my genre that I usually play.
Yeah, not something that I'm gonna fork down some serious cash to go and try. Mm. But I do love some of these indies because what I see that you're trying to do is really create some eye-catching moments with your games. And that's what you got to do, right? You got to give them something they haven't seen before and just hope that people gravitate towards it.
Yeah.
Now, let's change gears and from an indie to a really big name thing, you know, with like Fortnite. And Fortnite is now having a new character, right?
Yeah. I think it's appropriate. It's Aloy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it looks cool. Yeah. She looks cool.
They do a good job, like, taking the character design and then implanting them into the Fortnite world. I mean, even with Ryu and Chun-Li, they did a great job. You know how I kind of beat them up about them having guns instead of throwing fireballs or whatever. But like when you look at Kratos or Master Chief or those Marvel characters that were in there, they look great. And shout out to their designer because they do an excellent job doing that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And speaking of Street Fighter,
yeah.
Did you see Power Rangers Battle for the Grid?
Dude, I wish Ryu could play that in Street Fighter V. He is just kicking ass. Like,
explain that real quick.
Yeah, because like you see Jason, the red leader, get beat up, and then all of a sudden you see Ryu, and he's all white with his headband and the helmet, but the helmet and then his shoulder pads kind of look like Tommy, the Green Ranger. And he's in his iconic Street Fighter V gloves, and he's throwing Hadoukens and throwing Tatsus and Shinshoryukens and doing air Shinku Hadoukens everywhere. And his combos are just insane because, like, every fighting game has a different fighting, like, combo mechanic. And this one is, I have never played it before, but it looks super fun. I do know it's by the people that created, or I don't know if it created, but sorry if I misspoke. But then I know the influence by Marvel's Capcom because you can interchange your characters in that game too, like MVS2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it looks great. I love it. And then I think Chun-Li's coming out too.
Oh, is she?
Yeah. I like how they designed their helmets and it looks fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Let's do this because we are going to. And after this segment, we're going to jump right into our interview. But let's talk about what you've been playing.
Okay.
Because this guy has been playing some game for, like, clear into the early morning.
Yeah. I've been playing Diablo 3 with the Diablos, Eugene and Mike. This game came out, like, 2017 or 18, and I remember playing it. With some friends, but not to this point where I'm like staying up late, 2:30 in the morning, waking up at 7, take Rocket out, and you know, I'm just trying to build up my character, run some greater rifts, try to get on the same level as Mike and Gene, because they're running through these rifts and they're really like sprinting through it and they're not dying. So I need to catch up with them, but it's fun. I mean, you go in, you do this rift or you do whatever bounties, you get the gear. And then, you know, you search through the gear, see if it's better than what you have. And you make gems. And it's funny because these games, it's like, just like Destiny, you're like passing by the story. I don't even know what's going on in the story. All I know is that some lady turned into Diablo and then Teriel is in the fallen angel and like there's a Reaper of Souls season, which I have no clue what happened. I really don't. All I know is that guy was the enemy, not Turiel, but the Reaper of Souls dude with his tooth scythes, and that's it. I have no clue, no lore, no nothing. I just look at my character. I'm like, yeah, I want him stronger.
Oh wow, wow!
It's one of those games, but it's fun because you're just rolling it with your friends. You know, you're just chatting in between. Kind of like we were chatting about that Optimus Prime. Did you see that Optimus Prime?
No.
So Hasbro released a automated robot transformer.
No way.
$700, but yes, it's badass. It is badass.
$700.
And you go on eBay, it's worth. People are selling for more than double.
$700.
Yeah, but
it's not a toy anymore.
No, it's not for. It's not for 5 year olds.
Wait. This is a semi truck that turns into Optimus Prime.
Yes. See, it sounds cool, right? What the heck? I don't like the way how it walks. It looks funny. If you search it on Hasbro and type in Optimus Prime, you can see it just for the price. You can search by price, and it's the highest one there. But, like, its movements, it's so cool.
Yeah.
I almost said pre-order. Almost. Oh, I pressed the button. I didn't say input username or anything like that.
Wow. Yeah. 700 steep, bro. For me, that's steep.
Dude, you know, but now when you look at the resale value, I'm not really a person about resale value, because I would definitely keep that, open it, and then play with it for a little bit, and then it would just sit there, like on my desk. Kind of like the BB-8, which I've had.
Does it talk? It better talk for $700.
It says stuff.
Shoot.
And later on, you could program it with your phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Autobots roll out.
Something like that. we'll show it to you like after this.
That is very cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. So we were just talking about that on Diablo, you know, going to see how everybody's day was going, and then just talking about whatever, any topic while we're playing, you know. It's fun.
That's cool.
We haven't had a game like that since Destiny, where two or more people would come together and start playing.
Yeah. A funny thing is with that Diablo 3, I actually had it on the PS3.
Yeah.
And then I try to you know, load it on the PS5, didn't work. I even tried loading it on the PS4 and it didn't work.
But you're playing Iceborne with your daughter now.
Yes.
Right?
Now, it's just I don't know if it's Iceborne, if it's just the Monster World.
It's Monster World. You have to purchase Iceborne, but then the free one, you know, that PlayStation gives for free.
And you know what? And let me just tell this to our listeners, because I'm sitting here looking on YouTube and for weeks trying to figure out how do I play Monster Hunter World with the PS4 and then play it again on the PS5, or, you know, in the same household, right?
Yeah.
And I'm searching everywhere and I can't figure it out and this and that. So I see James out there, and I ask James. He's like, okay, well, you got to do this. You got to create an account on the PS5 and then play on the separate account on the PS4. And he said some other stuff, Jay, but...
Yeah, like make the PS5 your primary console, make your daughter have her own account, and then you play on the PS4, and then she play on PS5.
And it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. And like, why do I even need the internet? I don't need the internet anymore, because
I don't know most things, but I know some things.
I just give next door to Jay, man. Jay hooks it up, man. And that's basically what we've been playing, that. And I'm still trying to finish off the story in Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it, you know? And what I want to do right now is kind of segue into our interview, because we have Kevin here from Addie's Games and... assistant manager at a local board and role-playing game store called At Ease Games here in Miramar, San Diego. So happy to have Kevin here, and we're hoping to make this an ongoing relationship and have Kevin on periodically. And so we first want to get to know Kevin a little bit. He was telling us a little right before we started about, you know, some of the stuff he's dabbling with games. But Kevin, tell me, am I saying this right when I... called Dungeons and Dragons gaming as a role-playing game? Is this correct terminology? How would you go about explaining this to our listeners?
Sure. As I said, this is Kevin, and I'm very excited to talk about all manner of role-playing today. So, terminology-wise, role-playing is correct. Role-playing is also associated with video games, so they've updated it to tabletop role-playing games. Why? Because we need our acronyms to make sense.
Yeah.
Though often I like to call it a cooperative storytelling experience, because that's what we do. We get together and we decide to play pretend in all manner, shapes, and sizes. And of course, that superstar, the one that's been around probably the longest and the most known and infamous, is Dungeons & Dragons.
And you can see, Kevin, I'm sporting my Stranger Things Dungeons & Dragons t-shirt here. It's my only Dungeons & Dragons t-shirt, but I had to bust it out and represent the Dungeons & Dragons community. I was super impressed with your storefront. And if you haven't seen their store, you need to go onto their website at eddiesgames.shoplightspeed.com. And you can also see some of the pictures of their storefront at Facebook. So that's www.facebook.com/eddiesgames and Twitch. They are on Twitch, and you can look for them at @eddiesgames, the letter S and the letter D. So first, can we do this? I'm gonna skip around here. I got so much I want to talk to you about, Kevin. But talk about your amazing storefront over there in Miramar.
Sure. I guess the first place to start is we were probably post-pandemic, even though we're still in it, but revving up to be one of the larger gaming centers for role-playing games, tabletop games, including miniatures, board games, and such. And we are a premium, what's the full title? A WPN premium store with Wizards of the Coast, which is important to Magic players. This means that we will be a hub for all things geeky and good. And any big events coming up in the near future, which there are set up, as we are still getting all our vaccinations and not even in yellow yet, but we do have some big plans going forward. Well, basically, we're going to take some of our old plans that we put on put a pin in during right before the pandemic last year, and trying to revitalize it. And then, of course, we've got some new ones that folks are very interested on, which I will be happy to share in the near future once we have all the details. Otherwise, a good thing to note is the store has two sides. We have a front, which is mostly the retail, and then the back, which is the games area. And then we do have an upstairs, which we've been redesigning for our digital studio and our 3D printing. It's kind of our pet project that we started beginning of the pandemic, and now is kind of full-on forge. If I could hire fantasy-less dwarves, I probably would have.
Can you talk about the 3D printing? Because I was, I think it was Hadrian that was telling me how you have some kind of copyright.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's kind of a new frontier for 3D printing. It's interesting in a lot of ways because the technology's been around for a while, but not very accessible financially. Mm-hmm. And only recently has it kind of fallen into more the public's hands, right? And so it's a frontier right now for licensing. What's fair, of course, if an artist does something, you want them to get their pay, right?
Yeah.
So what we do is we go and we ask these artists who do Kickstarters or, you know, they have their own, Patreon.
Right.
And we inquire if they'll have a license that we can, you know, basically rent for a few years, giving us the property to print out anything of their, out, you know, whatever their X amount we pay for or their whole inventory, which saves our consumer the need for buying those files. And so we can just do those on the ready. Then we're just printing out. We're usually charging the labor fee. But at the same time, much like a Kinko's, we do have the ability to do prints for other folks who own the rights to things. So that's kind of where we're at. Ideally, I'm hoping in the future we'll just have all the thing figured out once this becomes more of a normal business for folks where they're more laws in place, especially with California. You want to make sure you got it all up and up. But for now, we have, I think, like 6 different licenses for various artists. So that's kind of exciting.
Cool. You know, Kevin, I'm going to back up a little bit. We want to know a little bit more about you, Kevin, maybe the DM, the Dungeon Master. So tell me, how did you first start getting into Dungeons & Dragons?
I can tell a few stories about that in a little detail, but because I think this is going to come up a few times.
Yeah.
In Dungeons & Dragons, the DM is the correct term. It's known as the Dungeon Master. As the game evolved, it started to become more of the GM, as in the Game Master. Various other terms will be storytellers, or just similar narrative tools, right? It's the person in charge of giving out the main role, so we'll probably use those interchangeably just for fun. So don't worry too much about that
okay. element.
But the important part is it is a challenging role, yet fun, and hopefully we'll get to delve into that a little bit more as we chat. Backing up on how, or when did I first dove into Dungeons & Dragons or role-playing in general? About 25 years ago. So folks probably don't realize because we're in the internet, but I'm 37. And so I got into role-playing games at the young age, about 12, middle school. I like to blame one of my childhood chums. He's the one that convinced me to give it a go. It's around the same time like HeroQuest was actually like a popular board game. Kind of expensive too at the time, now kind of cheap if you look at the board game market. But he, I think we were at a charter school at this time, kind of a new concept for San Diego, and he invited me over. We started checking out some of the cool books he had, and he decided to run something on the Borderlands. I know I've said the name wrong, but this is a classic module that's challenging. And this would be Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, or maybe classic. I forget the exact system at this point. Anyhow, we gather some childhood friends, maybe the neighbors. We sit down in front of a large wooden table, dining room table, at my grandmother's house, where it's, the only AC we had was the front door open and maybe a ceiling fan. I imagine this was during the summer because it was hot. I remember sweating. Now, what was cool about this is it was my first experience trying to figure out the concept of pretending to be someone you're not, right? So we have these pre-made characters. No, we actually tried to make characters in this experience. And I'm sure we did okay, maxed out stats, all sorts of craziness using things. I don't remember the character in particular at the time, but I do remember going through the adventure. And in that adventure, we ran across a creature iconically known as the owlbear. This was my first taste of a true monster, this grizzly bear with an owl head. During the encounter, half the party ends up either being killed or running away in fear. Now, what's important about this story is, though this was one of my first experiences with D&D, it was a lasting one. Because throughout these 20-plus years, we have kindly renamed this creature the Murder Bird. And it pops up every edition. That said, I think the second big kind of story adventure that I kind of remember might have been the same year, might have been the next summer. But we were able to try out second edition with more of a veteran DM. And what was neat about this experience particularly was we came to the table. And this table was one of those kind of like outdoor tables that you would throw a professional wrestler through inside of a garage with the door wide open, kind of a little bit of cross breeze. And each of the chairs had a set of polyhedral dice, which were the kind of traditional for Dungeons & Dragons, pretty basic. Numbled two pencil, sharpened and ready, and a pile of papers in the middle. Now, as we came at random times to the table, they was presented to us to look through this pile and choose a character. Pre-generated characters. Quite a weird concept, right? But actually, you'll find out later, it's a pretty common thing to teach new players. And I ended up picking up a character, no name yet, a human barbarian. And ended up naming him Darwin. So
these are these characters that, sorry to interrupt, are these characters that you created on your own, or is this something that you can take out of like a second edition or even the fifth edition? Are these pre-made?
So it's a little bit of both. This storyteller pre-made them for us to run the game. So he kind of got some easy concepts. And but to also follow up on what your thing is, it's these characters would only be able to exist in the second edition setting by rules.
Okay.
Yet, as D&D has progressed through the editions, and we are up to five, you could adapt them easily enough by just recreating them using the new rule sets. Not a lot has changed on some core mechanics. There's some very true, like sacred cows, like stats and alignments that have never really changed much. And to this day, they still have barbarians and humans. So. But of course, the small last part of that story is throughout the adventures, we did one or two, you end up getting the noble title. Actually, we didn't talk about this. What are the curse words I'm limited to? Can I say more adult things?
You sure can. And I just what I'll do is I'll put a note in the podcast notes that this contains explicit language. So you're our guest. Okay. You're our guest. Well, I do not want to censor my guest.
I do it.
and that's fair. And I like to keep things family friendly for sure. But this is kind of one of those middle ones. but let's see how it goes.
Of course.
So his barbarian's noble title ended up being Dumbass Darwin.
Okay, that's fine. Thank
and,
you.
Right, oh good.
I thought
he had his own theme song.
An on back tournament or something like that. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. But yeah, he ended up becoming Dumbass Darwin with his own theme song. And this is going to, again, date myself, but it was to the same song as Brown Boy Tano from South Park, the movie.
That's good.
Yes. So if you've seen that movie, you can appreciate how clever we were back then.
And don't talk like you're an old man, because you're 37. I'm 49, so I've been around a little bit. I'm a little bit older than you. You're closer to
Jay's
age, though.
Yeah,
I think
39. Did you go to school around here in San Diego?
Yeah. I was pretty much. I wasn't born in San Diego, but I've lived here for 35 years.
Okay. Oh, fantastic!
Somewhere around there. Yeah. I've been in San Diego off and on. Sometimes in East County, sometimes Central. Mm-hmm. A little bit of North County for a bit too, but that was when I was younger.
Yeah.
But so I like to consider myself at least raised here. Pretty familiar. No, very much an urban rat.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You grew up here. You're 35 years.
You saw America evolve, yeah. Change, and all that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation, man. Especially if we're talking about like North Park. But yeah. That said, yeah, I've been here a while, and what's fun about this is I've also seen all the different stores come and go to, which I do feel like could be a fun conversation, but that's not really a happy one, so I don't know if we want to go down that road.
Yeah, like Artifacts. When I was growing up, I played a lot of Magic, and there was this shop in Mira Mesa that was next to that Mervin's, and I would ride my bike there all the time and play Pogs, and then it went into Magic cards. And
sure.
And I remember going to Artifacts in Carmel Mountain to purchase like a genie card or a Shiva dragon or some other things that were like really expensive back then when you don't have a job. So
yeah, but it brought you joy, right?
Yeah. My friends are like, "How come you bought?" Like my friends that I play with understood, but then some other people, they didn't understand why I was so happy about these cards or opening a deck and seeing what comes out of it. So it brings a lot of memories. You talking about these stores, and it is sad that like for example, this Artifacts that was near Harland, or that cider place Newport. I don't know if they're there anymore.
They are. I tend to the Newport or Newtopia, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Newtopia, and then there's Lost Cause Meadery around the corner from us. A lot of them are still doing well. There's some breweries, like more beer-based ones, that may be less good. But yeah, I can definitely vouch for the cider and meaderies because I like me some ciders and meaderies.
Do you know if that Artifacts is still there, that the card shop?
No, they moved on. About the same time I kind of got the job with Addie's Game, which I guess is almost 3, going on 4 years. Hmm. So they were probably in their swan song about that point, or gone for a year, I forget.
Yeah.
I do know that Game Town was gone at that point, which was down in Old Town.
Oh, wow.
There's a few others, like I said. So.
Yeah, there's like a comics and stuff, like where El Patron is, so that's not there anymore. But yeah, when we walked into your store, I was amazed. It's huge. It's like a huge gym could be in there, you know, because the second story and then the front setup is so beautiful. You have all these statues because I collect a lot of anime statues and Gundams, so my eyes just totally were attracted to those the statues you had there of Predator and or Alien and some of the like shield looking ones that are coming out, and there's a dragon like, you know, behind it. And then when we ventured back into the back room that you have, I was even more amazed because I saw all these mats laid out, and I saw that you had a schedule of games that you had for the week, and I didn't even know that was going on in San Diego. So I was pretty amazed with that. It's cool.
Exactly. Yeah, it's one of the hidden secrets, right? Is we always have something going on, and it sucks if you get the notes. Not quite an exclusive club, but sometimes it feels that way when you don't. You just find out about it. But no, I appreciate that. I actually take a lot of pride in how much the store will look, right? I want to make sure it has that certain feel when you enter that you do feel a little odd or almost like you're coming into Disneyland for the first time.
And
to the point that I go every month or so, I'll actually rearrange things just to make it feel more new.
right Do you guys go to Comic-Con?
We don't, partly because Comic-Con over the years has become more media-driven and less local-driven, so it's not worth the cost that it takes to get into it. Like, we wouldn't make our money back.
Oh, I see.
Though there was another local convention we used to do called Kingdom Con, but they, in 2019, had their last one, but they ran for like 10 years.
Oh, wow. They didn't even know.
So, can we...
That's okay. It's one of those things, like, I'm sure someone will fill that void at some time soon. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe post-pandemic.
Yeah, maybe you guys will. I mean, you guys are huge.
So Kevin, it sounds like you've 20 plus years playing Dungeons and Dragons. You've probably played as much a character as well as a DM, right? Is that safe to say?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I've definitely been more of a character than a DM. But that I will be promising you that that DM experience was doubled down on this year during the pandemic.
So. Is there a preference for you then?
I generally like being a character. I have an easier time focusing on being ridiculous. It helped my professional wrestling career, just being able to be one person. And they kind of, you know, I will be honest with you, they do run hand in hand, being a character among a bunch of people and being a character on stage, right?
So
it's really easy to do that. Now, the storyteller, what's kind of fun, though, is you get to be the whole cast, the director, and the producer. So at the same time, you're not just being a character. You're setting the world as a character and kind of describing it and getting folks into that in a fun way. Even if it's like a pre-generated mod that you can read out of a book or just out of your head. It's kind of cool being a creative outlet, a creative cast director kind of thing. It's neat.
So as a DM, do you have it set in your mind like, hey, I want to create this long adventure for them, or is it just something that you just keep an open mind and you just kind of ebb and flow with how the characters are in your group?
So it's a great question because it's different for every person. So there are, you can read it out of a module and read it book for word for word, or you can completely change it and just take the bare bones of that module and keep going. Module's just a fun term to kind of say the adventure. Or you could do what I ended up having to do this year. We got sponsored by Wizard of the Coast, who does Magic and Dungeons and Dragons, to do a live weekly show for about 4 episodes, I think it was.
Okay.
And we were given the opportunity to run a module for the Theros book, but I ended up deciding to just do a weird idea I had in my head. Mm-hmm. I was tired of folks doing the traditional humans, elves, dwarves. So I asked my players or cast people to make more anthropomorphic is a good term. Beastmen is a better one.
Okay.
So they ended up picking like frog folks or turtle people. We even had a gator man. And then they took but the same kind of classes, the barbarian, the druid, something more primal. And we went on a little adventure in kind of a swamp-based world where gods existed, but they were more like strange creatures, almost like Avatar the Last Airbender, like these kind of hybrid creatures that have ascended to being these powerful beings, almost dragon-like, but they could also bestow blessings and boons. So it was this very dangerous world, tribal, like there were different cultures kind of fighting each other, and they kind of had a small, friendly area, built it from there. And that ended up being a 4-session beginning to end story arc where they dealt with some Kowatoas, which are kind of fish people. They're literally crazy, which is great. And then they ended up going on exploring more of the world for the next 7 months before the Christmas time kind of hit and we got pulled. I still did a few more sessions after that, but for the most part, with the holidays, we kind of reevaluated what we wanted to do as a store. We ended up doing a module called Ice Cream Tale and started that.
So these sessions, are there games that can last like an hour? This seems like it can last over months.
Correct. So most of the time a session can be as low as an hour, though I would say 2 is probably the lowest you want to go, up to 4. And, you know, my youth, I could do like 6 plus if I had like the whole weekend free.
Right.
And the reason for that is, again, it's a whole bunch of folks kind of sitting at a table or around the couch or on a bonfire, and they're just enjoy exchanging what their characters are trying to do. There are rules that help see if they succeed or not, but for the most part, it's kind of a yes-and experience. D&D also has the element of doing combat, which doesn't require a grid, like a battle grid, so you can actually see and move figures around. Mm. Some love, and this is their favorite part of the game, and others would rather do theater than mine. And these are all concepts we may touch on if you're curious. Because, again, role-playing games are the topic at hand, and there's quite a few different ways of going about this experience for folks. For me, I actually prefer the grid and figures, but I'm also biased to kind of print-out figures.
Right. Yeah, I definitely use the figures. I need to see what my character looks like. Speaking of characters, what's your favorite class? You mentioned Barian and Druid.
That's a great question, actually. I'm glad you asked. So for years, I've always enjoyed the Wizard class. Okay. It's changed ever so slightly.
It's like DPS.
And what's fun about them is it's kind of... Yeah, well, for me, the Wizard is the one that's the arcane master, the Swiss Army Knight. It kind of has, when it comes to magic, they can kind of do everything. Mm-hmm. And then the most iconic when it comes to, like, I want to be the really powerful magic user, bringing down comments, shooting fireballs, raising the dead, all these cool things. That's the fantasy trope, right?
Right.
But they're also generally considered like old men, Gandalf and stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of evolved over the years and changed. But this is also the opposite of me in real life. I'm kind of look like a jock, you know, big stocky guy. I got long blonde hair. Mm. I'm almost Viking-like now. but at the time when I first started enjoying this class, I was like 300 pounds plus high school student, right? Mm. In there. And so, you know, like I wasn't super athletic, but I definitely had some thoughts. And so, yeah, the wizard always, you know, really drew to me. And I appreciate that over the years, it hasn't changed the essence of it, but instead they just created more classes to play off the ideas. Because if you like the idea of doing magic, but you don't want to be like a book learned kind of character, they have ones that are more like the jock version of a wizard.
The jock version, huh?
Yes. they flex and they can shoot fireballs because it's from their blood. Like their heritage, a dragon, you know, at some point was part of their history. And because of that, they can now breathe fire. But with magic and/or they get enhanced strength. There's a whole like cool thing we can go in the middle of that. But the short of it is, yeah, they kind of cheat. They have limited magic, but the magic they have is still
like potent.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotta ask this, and I it's probably gonna come off as a total noob question, right? Is there a difference between a wizard and a warlock, or even a sorcerer? Are there differences there, or?
According to Marvel, it's a hat. Right?
Well, Marvel is right. Yes. There is literally a hat that separates the two. If you want to be true to the D&D rule set, they are three different classes, which just means they get different cool perks and or possibly restrictions, right? But I'm going to try to break it down in a very easy way mechanically and narratively to appease our fans out there.
Okay, thank you.
So all three of them are classes you can choose, so jobs. Let's think of them as jobs that you can walk into. And all of them are about the study of the arcane arts. So this is just, you know, basically your common magical trope. Like Harry Potter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So magic, that's arcane. The wizard is the kind that went to college, took all this, you know, got his master's degree, and now just knows all this cool stuff and does it. And again, the sorcerer is kind of the jock. You know, they're good at magic. They got through most of college, but for the most part, they were happy with how much they learned. And usually, they're more physically or positive, right? So they like to use their con and their charisma to get through life. Now, the warlock, love the warlock, because he's kind of a new trope that's very interesting. You're like, that's fine. I want all these cool things, but I don't really want to pay for tuition. So they end up taking a loan. But the loan is often with like a very nasty creature. It could be an elder god. It could be a demon. Could be a powerful dragon. Could even be a mischievous fae, which is kind of a I could go days on fae.
So does that mean that the power was given to the warlock? Is that
correct?
Gotcha.
So it was given to him, but it was like something is owed.
Yeah,
right?
it's always
like yeah, you're gonna have to give something back. It could be good reasons, could be bad. It depends on you and your story, right? So they keep it kind of loose. Now, what I love about this is the cleric class. And a cleric is kind of the voice of God, right? Whatever God there is. Could be the God of pie for the purpose of our story. Mm-hmm. And they are considered a positive figure because they come down, they heal people, they do miracles, they do blessings, right? But the same concept, if you think about it, is they're serving a being for power. It's but often the warlock is frowned upon because he's doing the same thing.
Well, no, that's awesome. Thanks for breaking that down.
Are there paladins? Because that's the role I choose, like in Final Fantasy 14, choose paladin. I'm playing Diablo 3 with my friends because there's nothing to play right now on the PlayStation. So I picked up a crusader. I love the sword and shield.
Of course. Actually, here's a fun note. The paladin term from all those video games was the origin from Dungeons & Dragons. It was one of their first unique classes. Back in the old days, they did have a lot more restrictions. And paladins could only be humans. Human paladin. And it was a very stringent, restricted class. They were the demon slayers, the goody good two shoes. They only could do, and very lawful, right? They had an order. They had tenets. This is how we live our lives. But because of how strict it was, they got all these cool bonuses in games mechanically, and sometimes even some of the best toy magical toys, like the Holy Adventure. Yeah, no, it's they're neat because they also had a lot of changes over the years, and that could be a whole other conversation. But yes, the paladin is a great class in all editions of D&D, particularly 5th edition. They're actually, funny enough, they kind of turn from tanks into more of a striker class.
Oh, they're like more DPS than a tank, huh?
Yeah, they have the ability to kind of like use some of their spell slots to use like divine magic, like burst of damage, basically. Right. Like they hit you with fiery light, and usually because of that, they'll use two-handed weapons to increase the odds of doing more damage regularly. And if you build them properly, you could do every hit you do could basically use one of these things, which is called a smite. So yeah, video game wise, they definitely feel like they're more damage in 5th edition than a tank.
Right.
But they can. Yeah, that's the other cool part. You can build characters to kind of fill the role that you want, using video game terms or not. Often though, it's it just depends on the path you take because there's also subclasses in the game.
Yeah.
What's the age range of the heroes, if that's the correct term to use, that play with you or that you organize? Are we talking, you know, middle school and up? Because I I'm asking this because there's got to be a certain maturity level to be able to carry on a conversation and be able to have a good storytelling experience, right?
Sure, that's a good question because Dungeons and Dragons was designed ideally with certain player levels in mind, right, or ages. And those are the ones probably teen and up. But the game has evolved in a way where you could play the game with your family, a younger kid, which probably 7 and up, depending on each person's kid, on enjoying the game. You just don't use all the rules for the most part because, again, it's just kind of what do you want to do and let's see if it happens kind of experience. So I've DM stories for younger kids as young as 5.
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't recommend that. Okay. Wouldn't recommend it necessarily, but it's. But you can, and I've done it as old as folks who are like in their 60s. It doesn't really change much other than who's nap time. But the I would agree that ideally, if you're going to have a mixed age group, the younger audience should be a little older or a little more mature, depending on who you're playing with. But each group has a certain tolerance or need, right? Like if it's your family, it's very easy to tolerate young kids or the goofiness they might want to interact with the thing. But from my experience, I'd also have 40-year-olds who are just as goofy. So. And I clarify, goofy is not a bad thing. Just there's a certain tone to certain groups, and sometimes you want it more serious. There's nothing wrong with goofy. I kind of sometimes really enjoy that about D&D.
That'd probably be more goofy.
Right. No. Yeah, I would agree. Serious. I would agree there.
It's a good thing.
I've got to ask you this because I can imagine, like, because you're spending hours on this character, right? Or at least your heroes are, and they've developed these characters, and they know the strengths and weaknesses, that kind of stuff. Tell me about a story or a moment where you had a hero, a person in your group that was so attached to said character and was like devastated when, you know, something happened to it.
Okay. I have probably three stories, but I think I'm going to choose this one.
Okay.
I was living out in, like, El Cajon. I think we were playing it at my place out there at the time. Must have been, like, my early 20s. Maybe late teens. Nonetheless, the character somehow dramatically died. Of course, they were upset. But they went to the point where they took their character sheet, went to the grill outside, and lit it on fire.
That's the equivalent of me punching the table when I lost in Street Fighter. D-ranked.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, because don't people keep, like, because I have one of these sheets right here, right? Do people keep their sheets?
They can. Like I said, it depends on your emotional attachment, because at the end of the day, it's just paper.
Okay.
Because you still always have the memory, but I do have logs of character sheets from all different editions, and I just moved here down in Chula Vista, and so as I'm packing up things, I kept finding stuff, and well, that's cool, and as I'm unpacking stuff, I'm actually just taking some time and kind of flipping through some of my old stuff, and it's nostalgic,
yeah.
It's a little sad, it's kind of funny, and at the same time, I'm like, finding the urge to still want to keep some of it, even though most of it just needs to be trash. So it's you're right. It is a bit of an emotional joy to have it. But at the end of the day, it's up to each person to decide if that's a treasure.
Yeah. Was that lady on Netflix? Like, if it makes you happy, keep it. If it doesn't, then toss it. That's how you get rid of, that's what I need to do, according to my wife.
That's what most of us need to do. I mean, some would argue I bought a house just so I could hold more things, right?
Yeah, like the extra room just becomes storage.
Yeah.
No doubt. Man, buying a house in San Diego is not easy.
Yeah, congratulations on the move.
Thanks. Oh. It was very quick, too.
Although there's a drive, though, from Chula Vista all the way up here now, though, because all that traffic, right?
The traffic's not too bad yet, especially the hours I have to go in. But it's I ended up buying a Prius a few years back just because of the gas. Oh, I was like, you know what? I gotta get rid of my truck. This is costing me too much.
Yeah, no 4.25
gallon. Yeah, I also own a Prius, and I'm actually going the opposite direction because the school that I work at is over in the South Bay, over in East,
oh, nice.
East Lake. So, hey, I got to ask you this. So let's say, like, somebody's listening and they're like, man, I'm excited about this. I've seen shows about it and I want to try this out. How does someone new get started?
Well, there's a few different kind of access to that, right? I guess the easiest one would be twofold. If you are more inclined, especially during the pandemic, to just stick with kind of online isolation, which I... It's fine. I think a lot of us kind of jumped into it during this year that way, and it's going online and checking out like Discords through D&D's official site, or you know, going to Roll 20 and seeing if there's anyone available. There's a lot of like easy resources out online now to kind of experience it, and forums aren't really a thing anymore, right? So, but back in then, you could also do it through forums. And that's one of the ways I strongly suggest folks, you know, kind of experience it. The other one, and that's the one I'm going to promote more, is that you would come to a store like ourselves, a friendly local game store, and try to join us for our Adventure League, which is the official organized play for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. Now, we have quite... I'm only going to be talking before we had a close enough for the pandemic, but at their peak, we had over 100 people attending every Wednesday.
Attending what day? Sorry?
Wednesday.
Every Wednesday.
Our main.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. Over 100 people.
And then that's we cool. also, yeah, that's about people per table. And then a few Fridays, we do like a fan night, so less intimidating for some folks, and you're one of the younger kids. Same time, we do Friday Night Magic.
And then. And you have Pokemon
Sunday,
too, right?
Usually the last Sunday. Oh, yeah, that's Monday, yeah. So we had Pokemon.
That would be me.
Great people. Play Pokemon San Diego. Good group. But yeah, every last Sunday, we would do a big convention-style one where we do adventures that you'd really only get to do if you went to, like, Gen Con, PAX, or Comic-Con would have some of these, but they wouldn't do it on-site. They'd do it at a hotel.
Now, if I just wanted to come in and just walk around and watch everyone play, is that acceptable?
Of course. As long as you're, you know, not being weird, strange, or odd about it. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with being weird, strange, or odd. Actually, I kind of encourage it. It makes my life a bit more fun. But it's, you know, you don't want to make people weird. So as long as, like, often folks will want to ask, like, do you mind my watch? And most folks will be like, cool, thanks for asking. Yeah. And, yeah. But our store is open. So, like, everything can be viewed from all angles. I mean, honestly, I have cameras, too, so I think for the day, right?
Right. Yeah, definitely. You know, because you have all that merchandise, man. You don't want anybody stealing these figures.
Yeah. But I think there's a layer to that, right? So we're enough space in the back where it's kind of hard not to overhear or like, just enjoy people playing any game, board game, otherwise. It's just part of the community. It's about being part of that atmosphere. There's a certain level of excitement you feel when you have that many people gathered together and enjoying their favorite hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gamers.
Definitely.
So if you're starting out, is there a particular edition that you recommend, or is there a certain, maybe even a certain game that you would recommend before jumping right into it, or what's your recommendation?
For that, the 5th edition, it's been around for almost 7 years now, and it's probably the dominant dog when it comes to role-playing games right now. If you look on the data sheets, it's like over 50% of the population. Wow. Who played role-playing games are playing Dungeons & Dragons right now. And that's only probably increased with this year of isolation. And part of its strength is that it's easier for folks to get into it. It's very accessible. Not rule light, but lighter than it has been in the past and compared to some of its competition. And so that's a good thing. I'm going to explain one of the coolest mechanics it introduced, and that's the advantage and disadvantage. Normally, you get to roll a d20. That's a cool-looking little rock, math rock, that has multiple numbers on it, 1 through 20. Mm-hmm. 20 is good, 1 is bad. And the odds say you want to roll 11 or better most of the time, right? That's a pretty common thing. Well, in this scenario, if you get rewarded advantage, say like someone is distracting them, you often will get to roll 2 dice, 2 of these d20s, and take the highest. So that just upped your chance. I don't know by what percentage, but there's like a +5 to it mathematically. It's +3 for advantage. Now, you do disadvantage. It's the same thing, but you take the lower of the die. And then I believe that's a -5, if you kind of look at it. So you're more likely going to fail on a disadvantage than succeed. So it's a kind of a cool, easy number fixing. And at the end of the day, what's great about it is twofold. One, it's real easy to teach and remember, and it's a feel-good. So if I get to have advantage for something, I'm excited because my odds of succeeding is going to be up there. And I have another chance of rolling a 20 on my die. And if I roll a 20, I get cool bonuses like extra damage, or maybe it triggers a cool ability on my character because I roll high.
Wow. How are we on time there, Kevin? Are you doing okay?
I'm doing all right. I think we can just keep going. I can definitely see some. I'm not in a rush today.
Okay. Because the other thing I wanted to ask is, are there any other games that you recommend for our listeners? I mean, I'm no expert at this. And that's why we asked you to come on. But I've heard of like Warhammer. Is that something that's popular in this genre?
Okay, so I have a few thoughts on that one. As I explained it, I'm segueing in my head two ways. One, because we're talking about D&D, it's a role-playing game. Funny enough, Warhammer, which is put up by Games Workshop, has just put out a role-playing game for their fantasy game, Warhammer 40K, and for Age of Sigmar, which is a fantasy. So this year, they just put out the equivalent of D&D for those two settings, those worlds they created. Now, that said, Warhammer is a very big genre of miniature games or wargaming. And Warhammer 40K is probably the most popular and one of the pillars of power in our store. I'm going to explain that in a second. I like to think of it as, you know, the Holy Trinity or the Triforce of gaming.
Yeah, yes.
These are our key pillars.
Same words I understand.
Right? And so we're looking at Warhammer, Dungeons & Dragons, and Magic, each one representing that preferred genre of gaming. So Warhammer being miniatures, pseudo-generals fighting each other, D&D being role-playing, and Magic being card games, right? So in the Warhammer front, particularly this year, this is literally their best year ever. It's ridiculous. They got money for their government, sent it to them, just like a lot of us did. Mm-hmm. And they just said, oh, here, you can have it back. That's how well they did.
Wow. Wow. Here, government, yeah. Take your money back. We don't need it.
Right. And so Warhammer has been around, if not quite as long as Dungeons & Dragons, because it's probably the oldest of the games we sell, but pretty close. It's like 30 years, Warhammer, and maybe 35. I'd have to look at my data sheets. But Warhammer Fantasy was one of the original big games where they would play. I have my big full army, you have your big full army, and it was elves, dwarves, and maybe in between. Very much Tolkien-inspired, right? And they would clash. So at some point, they decided to make the 40K version, which is the sci-fi one. And we had space marines, and space orcs, and space elves. They all had their own names. Orcs actually was orc, but with a K, because, you know, they're clever. And that game kind of ran with it. They became kind of its lead dog in that race. And still today is probably the more popular of the two. And what's neat about that is because of how it's popular, of course, we wanted to invest in it. Actually, our store owner really likes miniatures, since you haven't figured that out yet. Mm-hmm. And Warhammer has some of the nicest figures in the industry, for artist-wise or just simply just to put together. They use this really nice hard plastic that I adore. And they just put out a game that's kind of a board game and a miniature game called Curse City. Reminds me of like a souped-up Hero Quest, which, funny enough, is they actually helped make Hero Quest. It was them and Hasbro teamed up to do that. That said, I just put some of those figures together. Took me less than an hour to put like 8 of them together, and they're super detailed. It's very clever in how they kind of put them together. Also, ever so delicate, but at no point did I feel like I was going to break it. Yeah, they come fully colored, like one mold color. So the heroes were kind of an off-white, and the bad guy is kind of a dark gray. Sometimes they'll be a solid blue or whatever. But in this case, it won't be too bad. We'll hit it with a primer. We'll use some contrast paints, which is a new product they put out. And honestly, I could probably pump it out to a decent quality in about 5 hours. That's less than an hour per figure.
Can I go back to your 3D printing up there? So if,
yeah, no worries.
If people were to want to purchase a 3D printed statue, do you fill that service of painting as well?
So technically we could. Officially, the store does not. But, as you mentioned earlier, San Diego can be a very expensive town. Often my staffers do side gigs or commission work, myself included. So the published painter, magazine book. So I often love to do some side gigs for folks, especially if time allows it. You know, if I'm up with the baby at 2 a.m., what else am I going to do, right? Yeah.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, you've been listening to the Jay and Bay Neighbor Gamers podcast. We were joined with Kevin Burton from At Ease Games. And you know what? If you're enjoying what we're talking about here, I want to encourage you to go to 8990 Miramar Road, Suite 150. And that's where At Ease Games is located. And even Jay and I have been there, and the guys there are really helpful. And they've got guys that have different expertises in straight just board games and of course in the figurines and everything you can think of related to RPGs. Kevin, I want to invite you back because I really enjoyed this conversation, and I want to respect your time because we were talking about how you had to be somewhere at 6. So Kevin, how would you like to come back and join us in about a month or so?
I think that'd be an easy yes. I am also a fan of just chatting away. I do so in person, and the digital means has been kind of fun exploring this year. Hopefully I'll even have a better mic because today I'm working with a headset I use for gaming.
Yeah.
And you know what? I just got my vaccine, and so did James here. Maybe we can work out something in person too.
Oh, cool. I've been vaccinated for over a month now, so I feel that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, you've been listening to the Jay and Bay Neighbor Gamers, and thank you again, Kevin Burton, for joining us.
No, thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
So thank you, Kevin, for joining us on the Neighbor Gamers here at Jay and Bay. We make sure that you check out the show notes because we had some information there about At Ease Games, and they have something this Friday regarding Magic pre-release, okay? You got to check out the Strixhaven new set. Go to their website, eddiesgames.shotlightspeed.com. You'll get all the information about it. And you know, please tell them Jay and Bay sent you. That'd be really great. So, any parting thoughts from you, Jay?
No, just stay safe. Thank you for listening and have fun out there, guys.
All right. Have a great day.
Bye, neighbors. We'll be right back.